Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, the 9th of July. This is 2020. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Jeff Butts. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Oh, fantastic.
Glad to have you with us today. Also today, I have with me Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi. Yes, and nice to be on the show with Jeff. I don't think I've been on the show with Jeff before.
No, I don't think so.
So, Charlotte, I'd like to start with you, and I want to talk about...
What have I done?
No, I don't want to start with you. This is just okay. Where the show begins. We want to talk about a press release from Apple a little while ago, earlier today, about some updates they've made to their educational materials.
Yeah, I think... I'm going to do cynical later, but I think it's fair to say that Apple does genuinely care about education and, you know, everything from, you know, educational discounts onwards. It does care about that stuff, and it particularly cares about computer science education. And in that spirit, it has updated its developing Swift and everyone can code curricula. For those that don't know, just quickly, the developing Swift curriculum, that's aimed at high school and higher education students. Mm-hmm. There's three free books available on Apple Books today that will take you through the course. Another one's going to come in the autumn. Apple calls it the fall, but it's autumn.
Yes.
And there's also another new part of it is that there is a new online professional learning course for the people who are going to be doing the teaching. Mm-hmm. So for the instructors, and you can sign up to that today. And I believe it begins on July the 13th. So in a few days' time, you'll be able to access it.
Mm-hmm. And so one thing that's interesting about that curriculum is that it does, in the press release, it does call out that the Develop in Swift curriculum has been completely redesigned based on educator input. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah, they've obviously got some feedback from teachers and instructors and so on. Mm-hmm. And have given it an overhaul, which is good. I think, yeah. Okay, so I've done the nice part. Here's my cynical part. So obviously it is very good that more kids... teenagers learn computer science, learn any kind of programming language. Mm-hmm. It's genuinely important. I wish they taught it to me in our school when I was at school.
Yes.
It is noticeable that what Apple is providing is an education to its platform and it's the language it created.
Mm-hmm. Well, would you expect them to develop curriculum for Visual Studio?
No, but I mean, it's not doing kind of, there's no Apple teaching HTML. I mean, I'm being slightly facetious, but you know, HTML 101. Do you know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah.
Something a little more agnostic. Like, yeah, you could use your Mac and build a cool website, or you could use your Mac and build something else. Like, yeah, I get it.
No, and I understand. And it's good that kids learn Swift. As I say, that's important. That's a really good thing. I the cynical part of me is thinking... So Apple is just hooking them in early.
And, yeah, maybe. You know. I mean, well...
But anyway, that's only... fine. Look, if it gets people developing good apps for good products, everyone wins. But it's clearly in... You could argue it's a good thing, but it's also clearly in Apple's long-term benefit to have more people... people's introduction to coding to be in Apple's language mm-hmm. clearly benefits Apple. Let's put it that way.
I mean, this goes back to like your conclusion is a lot less cynical when you think about the long and storied history of Apple, and the reason everybody used a Mac when they were in school was because Apple went, you know, if we get to education, then if everybody grows up using Apple computers, then when they go out into the business world, they're just going to go, I need to be using an Apple computer, and then we will have them forever, mwahaha. Like, we've seen this move from Apple before.
You said it, not me.
So I'm not surprised, and it doesn't sound particularly cynical as much as it does pretty Apple-y, you know, which we've which is the thing we brought up yesterday, how Apple-y Apple has always been and continues to be. And this is, I think, a big piece of that. One thing I can tell you as a person who has taught young people how to code using Swift, and even initially, because AppCamp went back this far, using Objective-C the first year we had camp. I think maybe the first 2 years, actually. I don't remember now. But one thing I can tell you is that of the people, of the students who came and attended AppCamp, one of the things that I have noticed in the students that I have continued to be in contact with in some capacity is that the ones who were interested in computer science did not go on to continue building iPhone apps or even Mac apps. You know, there's some web stuff. At least one person that I know has gone on to cybersecurity and has been doing some real in-depth work with cybersecurity and has been pursuing that actively in college. And cool. Another person is actually a theater major and has written more than one play, and but enjoys the technology piece of it and has been doing some stuff in JavaScript, I think, is what it was. So one of the things that I like about this is, yes, Charlotte, like you said, like this is for building iPhone apps, but that was one of the things that AppCamp had a lot of appeal for, was we can build apps you can run on your phone. And that was pretty much a very wide base of students from which to choose. Like, lots of people were interested in building something for the phone they carried around. So that part of it was very cool. One of the things that I liked about AppCamp in particular was exposing people to a possible interest, or, you know, eventually maybe career path that they might be interested in that they hadn't thought about before. And I think that that's the biggest piece of what this gives you. Like, if you sit down with the Swift Playgrounds and build a little game, maybe you're going to be just super into game development, and maybe you only build stuff for PlayStations, you know, and it doesn't have anything to do with Apple hardware at all.
Sure. Look, as right. I say, anything that gets kids into computer programming and computer science and a better understanding of the technology we all use is a really, really good thing. I will park my cynicism slightly. And I will genuinely be checking out the resources, because I would like to learn some of this stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I you know, I've glanced over the press release and looked at what they've updated and what they've released new. And I guess my comment is that, you know, you have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
I've taught computer science. I've taught programming. And once I help someone learn, whether it's C, C++, C#, Objective-C, or Swift, once they've learned the one, they can transition to another one.
The rest
in
is
fairly
syntax.
Short order.
Yeah.
HTML doesn't give you that.
Right.
You know, with the exception of some of the stuff you might do in JavaScript.
Sure. I mean, I could have named any language, JavaScript,
well,
C.
Yeah.
I was just doing a non-Apple specific. I meant a non-Apple specific.
Right. And I think the truth here is that there are already a ton of really, really good resources for things like HTML, HTML5, and so forth.
Right.
When I was looking to learn Swift, there was very little that was really good, especially since Swift was evolving so quickly at that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I would learn.
That is a fair point.
Yeah,
and Apple invented the language. It's incumbent on Apple to
teach it.
To have resources available for people to learn. Yeah,
that makes sense. That's perfectly fair enough. I'll let my cynicism recede.
All right, cool.
I'm not saying you're wrong to be cynical, Charlotte. I'm absolutely not saying that at all. That's a big piece. I mean, it's a big piece of Apple trying to reel people in, right? Like, you know, we want everybody to develop iPhone apps because we want, you know, we get 30% of everything you make. Ah.
Right. And is it really cynicism or is it just realism?
Right.
I mean, Charlotte, I would say that you're not really being cynical. You're just being realistic.
There's a lot of pragmatism in what you're telling us right here.
Yep.
Hey.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, you guys take it as you wish.
I will. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for permitting me to have my own opinion.
Sure. We'll go with that. So, So the other thing we wanted to talk about today, we wanted to spend a little bit of time, if you are developing or interested in developing apps, you are probably going to want to make sure that they run on iOS 14, which Jeff has been playing with for the last day or so. And yeah. Jeff, I would like to hear a little bit. You wrote something up for MacObserver.com, and I would like to hear a little bit more about what, in practical terms, what's the stuff that we're going to see in iOS 14?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the biggest thing is that one of the biggest things is that how you can manage and organize your apps is going to be completely different.
Okay.
You don't have to have every app you download on a home screen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can hide home screens.
It's really cool how Apple invented Android. It's I'm excited for it.
Now, I've already discussed in another article about Apple copying Android, and you know, there was a writer at The Verge who said that it's basically just a part of the mobile operating system development lifecycle. Apple recognized features that Google was doing that really worked for its users.
Yeah.
And they've implemented that. And, you know, now you can actually choose in iOS 14, you can choose when you download an app, whether it goes straight to your home screen or if it just stays in the app library. So you don't have to have 1,000 apps cluttering your home screen that you have to scroll through to try to find the right one anymore.
Yeah, see, on the one hand, this sounds awesome. On the other hand, this makes me really nervous.
Why?
Well, because it's more... Honestly, it's kind of the opposite of what I want out of iOS. And the reason is because when you... Like, now, right, if you're on iOS 13 and you update an app and you haven't launched it yet, but you've updated it, there's a little blue dot next to the name. And I said this many years ago. I think it might have been like 8 or maybe iOS 8 or maybe iOS 9 even, like that far back, that what I want is another color dot for like, this app hasn't been opened or relied upon in any way for like 30 days. Like, do you still need it? I want that very much. I want more like what I'm not using than needing for my phone to show me the stuff that I actually do. Show me the stuff that I actually am using regularly. Show me like this app hasn't been launched since you downloaded it. Do you need it? Really? I mean, that's the piece I need. And I admit part of that is because like everything has to go on a page and there are many pages of apps. And, you know, if you throw something in a folder, you can forget about it forever. Right. But.
Well, you know about, let me just double check and see if it does what I think it does. Offload unused apps.
Despite me being rude about the Android thing and the, which obviously refers to the kind of widgets and home screen stuff.
Yeah.
I'm genuinely quite excited about it because it's one of the things when I transitioned from Android to iPhone to iOS that I really missed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a really good addition to iPhone. It just made me laugh a bit when I first saw it.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, Kelly, I mean, you don't have to use the app library if you don't want to.
Okay. Like I said, it doesn't make me nervous.
It's just there if you need it. And as far as finding out which apps you haven't used in a while,
mm-hmm.
iPhone storage in settings will give you that information.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, that's a recent development, but yeah, having it be a very easy thing to see. Like, I've scrolled past this page of apps, and half of them I haven't even opened in a month. Like, maybe it's time to just toss some of those. I would like if there was some easier way to tell that while I'm on the home screen where I can just toss the app immediately. That would be nice. But what else do we have in iOS 14 besides the new layout, which I do think is very cool, and I like that you don't have to have the app start at the top left.
Yeah, yeah.
And have so, 4 and then 4 and then 4 and then 4. Yeah.
Right. And yeah, because Charlotte mentioned widgets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We can now put widgets on our home screen.
I'm very excited about this.
Yes, I'm forward to that.
Yeah, I'm playing around with that. It's a little bit limited so far, but I think it's going to evolve and get more and more useful.
Sure.
For sure.
It's definitely nice. You know, I can, if I put a smart stack on my first screen, then I've got a on this day, which photos goes through and finds images from my library that might be appropriate for the day and puts them there. And then it, you know, if I swipe up, it'll give me my calendar entries. It'll give me my my Apple Music widget, maps, and various other things that it, you know, automatically determines what might be appropriate for me at that time.
Right.
So it's kind of cool.
I do like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. And one thing that I really, really like is I can now do picture in picture on my iPhone.
Which is also very cool. That's a thing that has been missing for a long time.
Yep. You know, I could do that on my iPad for several years, but now if I'm working, if I'm researching something on my phone and I'm watching a video on it, I can have the video in one corner and be reading an article or doing whatever at the same time, or taking notes, or, you know, doing something useful.
And for people who are interested in iOS 14, if some of this sounds like stuff that you want to get in on, I just want to point out that iOS 14 is available on the 6S and higher, and that does include the original iPhone SE. So if you have a 6S, a 7, an 8, a 10, a 10S, a 10R, or 11, then you'll be able to use this. So that's a piece that I think is kind of interesting.
And right now it's only available to developers, but I don't think it'll be very long before Apple opens up the public beta.
Yeah, the public beta is coming. And I will again point out, it's probably a terrible idea to put an early beta of iOS on your daily driver. We have seen all kinds of interesting stuff happen from that, from complete bricking to your phone no longer takes phone calls, so or makes them, which I know some people think is a feature, but some people think is a bug, especially since phone is right in the name. If you have, you know, last year's phone, or like I like to call it the drawer phone, the one that I keep in case there's some sort of catastrophe with a phone in my house and somebody needs to be up and running right away, I have my old iPhone 8 that sits in the drawer ready and waiting. Like, you know, if it's not your daily driver, maybe then it's a good idea to put it there. So,
yeah,
you know, all the standard issue, like there be dragons sorts of language applies to this.
The one thing, and I know this is very me, the one thing I'm really looking forward to, apart from the widgets and picture-in-picture stuff that Jeff has rightly highlighted, that I'm really looking forward to in iOS 14 is the way Apple News is going to work. And if you have a News Plus subscription and you hit a paywall on a included outlet, it's going to take you straight into News Plus. So you get to read that article through the paywall, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah,
that's going to be great, I think. Yeah. Of course, that leads to the separate conversation about who is and isn't part of News Plus or Apple News, the news app, you know, Plus or otherwise, and, you know, what that means for other people and et cetera. And I'm pretty sure, Charlotte, we will end up having a conversation about that very soon. But I think Jeff, was there anything else real quick that you wanted to point out before we wrap up?
Yeah, one more quick thing. You know, we talked when it was first announced, we talked about the Translate app and the fact that it was going to do all of the translations on device.
Yeah.
People need to know that if they want it just on their device, if they don't want to be sending their text to Apple to translate, they have to turn that feature on in settings.
Okay.
You have to actually go to settings, translate, and enable on-device translation. Otherwise, it's doing that whole two-way communication and, you know, the privacy concerns, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And, you know, part of it's privacy. That's completely legit, but also awareness. Just you should know what stays on your device and what leaves it. And this is one of those things that a lot of people are going to use. And we will definitely end up talking more about that in depth when iOS 14 is released, you know, maybe we'll even dig into it in public betas, just so that people are able to, be reminded.
Sure.
Of that.
It just kind of irked me. It kind of irked me when I saw that, because, you know, they made a big deal about how it was all going to be on your device.
Yes.
And then as I'm going through settings, I see, oh, I have to turn that on.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so. I think, yeah, I can see why it would be, I can see why it would be a switch, but I disagree with it being on by default. Anyway, so that's going to do it for iOS 14. As we find out more about it, as Jeff digs into it further, I'm sure we will hear more. So Jeff, thank you for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Charlotte, as always, it's a pleasure to have you with me on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamon. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.